Hello and welcome back to the Now Boarding Podcast. We've sat down with over 30 boarding area bloggers so far, and it's gotten tougher to match up schedules with the folks that I have left to interview. At some point we'll obviously run out of a pool of new bloggers that want to join us for an episode. So I've started planning for that future. Maybe a bit later than I should have. I want the format of Now Boarding to be different from my other podcast, Miles to Go. We'll still have longer sit-downs with boarding area bloggers as we're able to record with them, and as we get new bloggers on the boarding area platform. But we'll also introduce a new effort to keep bringing you great content in the travel podcast space. Stay tuned for more news about the new format, and thanks so much for listening.
Now Boarding, the official boarding area podcast, would like to welcome aboard all listeners. This nonstop service includes interviews, reviews, and insights from our talented crew of bloggers. Episode number one is Now Boarding.
Welcome aboard Now Boarding, episode three. Joining Captain Pizza in the cockpit on today's episode is Brian Cohen from The Gate with Brian Cohen. Make sure those tray tables are stowed, your seats are in the upright position. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the episode.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Now Boarding Podcast, the official boarding area podcast. This week, we've got Brian Cohen. He's author of The Gate. He's also a contributor for Inside Flyer, Travel Zork, and a number of other places. I've known Brian for, at least a decade now.
At least.
And I'm super thrilled to have him on to talk about his travel world. Brian, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Ed. Thank you.
Fun to do this in person. And even though I know some of the answers to some of the questions that we're going to go through today, I think there's some things I'm going to learn about you that I still don't know after over a decade of us being friends. Let's start with sort of the basics to lay some stuff out for folks. What was it that got you started down the road of travel?
You know, it's interesting that you ask that because I've always been into travel. The first travel experience I had was when my family took me from New York to Florida on a car trip when I was 9 months old. Now, obviously, I don't remember that. but I've been on a number of trips since. And when I was 12 years old, I was on my first flight. It was American Airlines from New York to San Juan, Puerto Rico, which they finally discontinued a couple of years ago, unfortunately. That was the first flight I'd ever been on, and it had been memorable, and I've just always been into travel. And it's really strange because I'm not an extrovert, and yet I like meeting new people. I like trying new things. I like learning new languages and new cultures. And it's, to me, I've learned over the years since I first started traveling that it helps me to keep an open mind about humanity in general, about society in general, and it helps me be more careful about the decisions I make and the things that I say. So I think travel is the best educator of anything, even a classroom.
And I really do agree with you. I think travel helps open up people's eyes. I've certainly been thrilled to take our kids around the world and show them things. I think they're more open to it because of it. And I remember Puerto Rico as well. It was such a great American hub for so many years. Obviously not so much anymore. It's interesting from my standpoint in that before I really knew what blogging was, I knew what The Gate was. And you've been doing it for such a long time. And so, part of the reason why I blog is because of folks like you and Gary that I saw doing this, and it seemed like a good way for me to communicate with my friends. What was it that got you started down the road of wanting to blog and talk to people in that format?
I think mine is a rather unique story. What happened was back in 2006, Randy Peterson, who at that time owned and ran Flyer Talk, had a call for writers because he wanted to do something that, as you had mentioned, Gary Leff and only a few other people were doing at the time, and that was blogging. And he felt that he needed a blog that was an extension to Flyer Talk. Now, he already had the Talk Mail newsletter, which came out only twice a month, still does, and so he felt he needed something that would be on a daily or every other day basis that would relate to what was going on Flyer Talk. So he called, and I think 22 writers responded to the call, including me. And I was one of two that was actually selected.
There were two writers for The Gate.
Writers for The Gate at the time. And that's when I was really thrilled that I was one of the writers because it was something that interested me when I found out about that call. And I thought, what a great way to be able to do something I truly love and be able to relate to it with words, you know, to other people who might be interested in travel. So that's really what got me into it.
Yeah, and at that point, you were very active on Flyer Talk. You were a moderator back then, which
still
was
am.
How you and I met.
Still am.
And it was interesting because I can remember having conversations with you about our roles on Flyer Talk as not necessarily moderators per se, but we were there to provide the customer service. And so people, I think, looked to you not only as that voice of customer service, but I think they looked at the gate as an early, you know, news feed, if you will, on our world.
That would probably be correct, although it wasn't just a news feed. It was also highlighting a lot of interesting things that were going on Flyer Talk, too, including some of the quirky stuff, which I really like.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I remember that conversation we had. It was in Orlando, and I love the fact that it still remains with you after all these years. I don't even remember. It was 2005 or something like that.
A long time ago. We were both probably still had some gray hair, but much less than we do today.
Probably. But, you know, what remains is it's still the case, except it's not just with Flyer Talk. It's with Inside Flyer. It's with the blogs that we do. We are trying to provide the best that we can for our customer, our reader, our whoever the person is that is looking to us to give them information that they can use that would be valuable to them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when I think about the gate in its infancy, if you will, it was, when I use that word newsfeed, it was, as I recall it, everything else I was reading was, you know, forum-based. There weren't that many travel blogs, if you will, and there weren't folks that were focusing on travel as a feed, if you will. You get a little bit of coverage in USA Today, things like that, but I read The Gate and I read View from the Wing because there was a steady stream of broadcast information that I wanted to know.
And those two blogs were the original ones at Boarding Area.
Yep.
They actually started in beta in December of 2007, before Boarding Area actually was officially launched.
So here we are almost 12 years later.
That's correct.
So for folks that haven't read The Gate and maybe haven't seen the number of posts that you have across the various forums, help them understand what sort of things that you consider yourself to either be an expert on or areas where you might be most helpful when they want to learn.
Well, first of all, I don't even like to use the word expert because that implies you know more than everybody else. And I find that no matter what I know, somebody always knows more than me, and that includes readers of The Gate. I think experts should be used on a collective basis. I think that if you and I and other bloggers and readers collaborated, we can come up with expert advice because it would be well-rounded. It's really difficult for one person these days to be an expert simply because of all the information that is out there. So let's start off with that. I tend to be more towards the economy traveler because to me, premium travel doesn't really make too much sense. I don't drink alcohol. I don't need a wide seat. There's a lot of things that I do not benefit from premium travel. So it's nice to have that once in a while. It's nice to be upgraded. But a lot of the other blogs and a lot of the other news media outlets concentrate on how to get, you know, luxury travel and aspirational travel for as low cost as possible. I like to try to make the economy traveler feel as comfortable as possible without getting upgraded, because that's basically what many people do. I mean, the luxury and the premium travel is only for a select few when you really think about it relatively.
Percentage-wise, absolutely. Right. Vast majority of people are traveling in an economy seat somewhere.
Right. So, there, believe it or not, I can't believe how many people actually appreciate when I do, let's say, a review of a Hampton Inn, you know, in Chester, Virginia, or something like that. Which, by the way, is one of the best Hampton Inn breakfasts I've ever had. But small things like that help to make a trip a whole lot more palatable and a lot easier and a lot more enjoyable when you get to appreciate those things. And to me, it's the appreciation of the little things that make life a whole lot better. I just find that if you are doing too much premium travel and you start expecting it, you know, and that tends to make the expectations way too high and the disappointment level all the more often happen. Not the greatest way to say that, but happens more often you get disappointed.
Sure. No, I agree. And I think, you know, you touched on the fact that the vast majority of people are traveling in economy. When you think about the way things have changed over the past 10 to 15 years, a lot more seats on planes. As it stands right now, those planes are more full. As an economy traveler, do you find it easier or harder to travel nowadays on airplanes, given you have a lot more knowledge, but it's gotten harder to travel smoothly?
I think it's more difficult for one reason. I think that travel companies in general are more deceptive, legally deceptive, about what they offer. So in other words, if you go to look for a flight, in the old days, when you look for an economy flight, you found the lowest price, you got regular economy service. Today, if you find the lowest price, more often than not, you're going to get basic economy, which means you don't get a seat assignment. It means you cannot upgrade. It means you can't bring a bag on board on some airlines. And that's deceptive, in my opinion, because if you're going to take, let's say, a trip to Europe, right, you're going to stay there for a week or so at least. You're not going to go for a day. I mean, most people usually don't unless you're a business traveler. And if you're a business traveler, you're not going to be flying basic economy anyway. So when they charge for every bag and every little thing that you carry on with you that you're going to need anyway, to me that is something that people are, there's very few people that are not going to travel with anything to Europe. I think that's deceptive. I think it's to offer a price and say, okay, now you have to pay for this, and now you have to pay for that, and it all adds up. It's not a $260-something dollar fare to Europe anymore. Now it could be $400, $500, $600, which is still not bad, but it's still deceptive. So to me, that makes it a lot more difficult to travel in economy. I like the idea of knowing what I'm getting and knowing what price I'm going to pay in total, in full, for what's required to travel rather than for what's optional. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, I would also editorialize there and say one of the benefits I see in reaching out to folks like Brian or other bloggers who travel in the way you want to travel is it's almost impossible to know all the different pipelines there are for which airlines offer which benefits on which fares as a normal traveler who maybe travels once or twice a year. And so I see one of the big outreaches for folks like you is to be able, for somebody to be able to reach out to you, because I know you're very approachable, and say, hey, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to do XYZ. Do you understand basic economy fares at fill in the blank airline? And help you, have you help them get that answer?
Yeah, in fact, I plan on, every time I plan on doing a chart of basic economy offerings from other airlines, a new one comes out with one.
Oh my gosh, just, the chart would be massive.
The chart, it's I mean, Lufthansa just announced one. So, but it has to be done.
It does have to be done.
There's no resource right now that has all of the airlines currently offering basic economy.
And what they're offering. Offering.
Right, because if you go on Delta, for example, you can carry a bag on board.
Right.
You can't do that with United. They charge you $25 to put it in the overhead.
Right.
So,
yeah. No, definitely agree. There are a lot of differences there. We're going to step away real quick for a quick commercial break from one of our sponsors. We'll be right back. We're going to learn a little bit more about how and where Brian does his traveling. We'll be right back on the Now Boarding Podcast. The Now Boarding Podcast is brought to you in part by No Jet Lag. Don't let jet lag get you down. There are flight crews, sports teams, and business executives all around the world that sing the praises of No Jet Lag. No Jet Lag is the leader in jet lag management for the last 25 years. Don't let jet lag spoil your next trip. Visit nojetlag.com to get yours today. And we're back with Brian Cohen on the Now Boarding Podcast. We've covered a bunch of stuff about why he started blogging, where he blogs, how you can find him, the sort of questions that he can answer. The next thing we're going to cover is how he travels, where he travels, to give you an idea of the sorts of things that he can help you with. So I guess first and foremost, do you travel mostly for work or for pleasure?
Well, the answer would be for pleasure, but most of the pleasure travel I do would be for the gates, so I guess it's for work too.
Sure, it's great to be able to combine both.
Well, the best of both worlds. I mean, how much better can you get?
Where, you know, when you think about how your travel has changed over the years, do you find yourself traveling more today than you were 10 years ago, less than you did 10 years ago?
My travel habits are very erratic. I mean, it's not more or less. I go in spurts, so there are times where there's a whole bunch of travel, and then there may be times where I travel maybe once in a whole entire year, and that's okay. I mean, we don't have to be traveling all the time, every time. So this week, yes, I'm doing a whole bunch of travel, but there's no like regular rhyme or reason to it.
Where, what sort of places do you normally find yourself in? You know, where do you like to travel to?
Well, you know, it's really funny. First of all, I like to travel to places I've never been to.
Sure.
And that's pretty important to me. But the travel habits have adjusted due to the way the miles and points programs have changed over the years, but also due to lower airfares on international flights.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, you have to wonder, is that a good trade-off? And I think yes, because when you think about miles and points really were a way, a tool, to be able to travel for less expensive. You know, I travel for free. I don't believe in that, but travel at least less expensively.
Sure.
But if you could do that outright with an airfare, who needs miles and points?
Well, I think it's great that there's flexibility today in that. I think that if you're flexible on your dates, you can certainly find those cheaper fares. And if you're not necessarily as flexible on your dates, then that's where miles and points can help you. But you're right. When I first started hopping on Flyer Talk, miles and points were the necessity to find a ticket for under $1,000 for the dates I wanted to go to Europe.
And, you know, the funny part is that a lot of low airfares today would have been considered mistake fares 5 years ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes they're considered mistake fares today, even when they're not mistake fares.
Exactly. So that's what's changed my travel the most, the fact that flights have become a lot more affordable for whatever reason internationally. Domestically, I don't think they're as affordable as they used to be.
I don't find that. I find that my business travel, because I think of how full planes are, I'm actually paying, I wouldn't say considerably more, but noticeably more for business travel, weekly business travel tickets in the U.S.
I would have to agree with that.
Do you find when you're figuring out where you're going to go are the fare sales the thing that's motivating you to fill in your next trip? Are you saying, I really want to get to Ecuador, or, you know, gosh, there's a very interesting fare that I see to South America. I've always wanted to explore Ecuador. I've always wanted to explore Iceland, if you will.
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, there are times where a fare sale will have me pointing to a direction that I probably would not have considered initially. And then there are times where it's just something that I was interested in doing. You know, if there's a destination that I had not been to and I felt it was the right time to do it, I have the time to do it. Sometimes the lowest fare is not always the best way to go.
Sure, sure. Do you find that there are any specific places that you focus on most for finding cheaper fares?
You mean in terms of websites?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Google Flights is one of the things that I use the most. And of course, I read various weblogs and...
Sure.
You have to use a number of different tools, because if you use just one tool, you're not going to, you know, get the best deals and everything. So I use a whole bunch of different kinds of tools to find where I want to go. So nothing really specific in terms of except for Google's Flights,
yeah,
that I would fall back on.
And I think Google Flights is a great entry-level place for people to start if they're not going to track 10 or 15 sources. It's going to be hard to go too far off the beaten path into a bad fare if you're on Google Flights.
Right, but we also have to consider the fact that it's not just airfares. It could also be hotel room,
sure,
rates, too.
Yep.
Sometimes you can find an attractive hotel room rate. Like, for example, you can go to Egypt really, really inexpensively, but the airfares could kill you,
right,
you know, depending on where you travel from. So that could be a factor as well.
Yeah. Yep, no, I agree. All right, we're going to step away one more time before we hit Brian with some lightning questions and wrap up. We'll be right back on the Now Boarding Podcast. The Now Boarding Podcast is brought to you in part by Norwegian Air. Norwegian is one of the fastest growing airlines in the world. The low-cost carrier is based in Europe and continues to connect cities that have never been connected before. Their most recent flights include nonstop service from Florida to Rome, Madrid, and Stockholm. They've also launched new service from Montreal to the Caribbean and from the Toronto area to Dublin. With a fleet of brand new 787 and 737 MAX airplanes, they're making the world affordable for thousands of travelers. We're back to wrap up this week's episode of the Now Boarding Podcast with Brian Cohen of The Gate. We're going to hit up some lightning questions here. Brian, coolest destination you've ever visited?
I'd have to say there are several. There's the combination of Australia and New Zealand. There's Alaska. There's the Canadian Rockies. Those are right now the most memorable to me as far as I'm concerned in terms of overall. But there's so many other destinations that on their own, they were just fantastic.
I love all of those destinations. And I will say, having known Brian for well over a decade, you're always going to get a very detailed answer from him. Favorite credit card?
You know, it's funny. For all these years, I have always been adamant about a cashback credit card. So Discover was basically my go-to credit card, especially at the time when they used to offer up to 2% cashback.
Right.
And there are still times where they offer 5% cashback on certain things. But I'm going to tell you something I haven't told anybody yet. I, this year, applied for a Hilton Amex Aspire credit card.
Okay.
It's the first time I actually went for a miles and points card, and I had a lot of reasons for it, and it's already paid me a ton of dividends. So that's become more and more my new favorite card.
Yeah, they had a pretty big sign-up bonus for that earlier this year, didn't they?
Yes, they did, but that's not what attracted me.
But it was probably part of it. I mean, there's some value in the sign-up bonus.
Some, but again, it was not the main reason.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, at least from my standpoint, recording these episodes to hear people's quote-unquote favorite credit cards. I'm sure I'm more nerdy about this than a lot of our listeners, but it's interesting for me to hear folks say, like, this is the one thing that I go to, not what they recommend to somebody else, but this is my go-to card, if you will. And it's doesn't surprise me to hear that a cashback card would fit with your travel patterns, especially if you're finding lots of cheap fares. Being able to offset that with the highest cashback card you could find is certainly helpful. But you've also always been a Hilton guy. So neither of those answers terribly surprises me.
Well, the main reason why I've always went for a cashback credit card, even though it was not as lucrative as a miles and points card, is because cash is universal. It is something that can always be used almost anywhere, whereas if you go with a miles and points card, you're restricted by the administrator of those miles and points, and that can be scary at times.
I agree. So our next question, I don't actually think I know the answer. I have a guess on the answer. Your favorite airline?
My favorite airline would have to be Delta.
I guessed it right.
But the interesting part is I haven't flown Delta all that much in the past couple of years.
Okay.
Primarily because of the discounted rates. Mm-hmm. And plus, I do also have miles and points in other airlines.
Sure.
So it's really interesting. I do like Delta's front-end staff, and I mm-hmm. like their service and everything. But it doesn't always work out for me, so I go with other airlines sometimes.
Fair enough. I'm 100% positive I know the answer to the next question. Favorite hotel chain?
You go ahead. You tell me what you think it is.
Hilton.
You're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. A lot of people have chastised Hilton for raising the award redemption values of Hilton Honors points. But I got to tell you, and this is the reason why I went for the Hilton Honors card, is because the Aspire card gives you diamond status, and I've always been treated so well with diamond status.
Sure.
That, to me, that's very important. It adds to the experience. So it's not always the miles and points. It's also, you know, what a program can offer. And no matter where in the world I go, I'm always welcomed well and everything. So you can't really discount that.
I think the value I hope that we're bringing with the Now Boarding podcast is, I'm going to liken this to the wine world for just a second. I like to drink good wine, and scores on wine bottles from so-called experts don't really matter to me. What matters more to me is finding out what it is the expert likes so that I know to drink something else that they recommend. And so in this case, I hope that folks are listening. If they like to travel in economy and they think that Delta and Hilton are brands that fit the way they like to travel, they'll know that they can come to you they can trust the advice they get from you is likely to fit their travel patterns.
As well, especially the fact that wherever I go with Hilton, they could stick with policy, but a lot of times they've gone outside of policy. They've upgraded me to a suite. I never asked for it.
Right.
Or it's just a lot of the things that they do, they go out of their way to do for me, even though it's not part of their policy. And I appreciate that. It makes me want to keep coming back.
Sure.
Whereas some other hotel chains don't do that.
No, and I agree. Everybody has to have that right fit and feel. And I know the folks that I know that love Hilton. My dad was one for many years. They really developed that sort of loyalty to the brand. I call it irrational loyalty, not for a bad reason, but in that it's not based on. To me, it's not based on money. It's based on things that are more emotional in nature. The way they make you feel, being made feel welcome by a hotel chain, I think, is one of the least rational things in the travel world, but also one of the most rewarding.
I'm not sure it's least rational. If I go someplace where I know there's a Hilton and I'm registered to stay there, I know that I'm going to get good service. There's a comfort factor involved with that. Whereas when you go to a hotel, you have you don't know anything about. You don't know how you're going to be treated. You don't know if they're going to be restrictive. You don't know if you're going to get a bad room. It's just nice to be able to know that that's one aspect of the trip you're not going to have to worry about.
I agree. When I say rationalize, the context I would give it in is that you're probably like me, different hotel chains. For me, it's Hyatt. But when you look in an area, while I'm sure that you look around at other properties,
yes,
you know going into it, you're leaning Hilton. They're going to have to convince you why you're not staying with them in a specific area if they have a property.
Right.
And you know, it could be because there's another great local property that you want to visit. There's a story. There's a flavor. But instead of surveying the entire landscape completely independently, you're saying, well, you know, let me see what Hilton has in that area, and then I'll sort of figure out where I go next.
Well, that's a good point because, you know, it's almost impossible to view the whole landscape every time you plan a trip. Yep. That's great if you do one or trip, two trips a year.
Right.
If you do 30 trips a year or something like that, you don't have that kind of time.
Right.
So you want to be sure that you get your options down to at least a point where you can make some choices and know that the choices that you make will be as well rational to what you want to experience when you get to your destination. Because when you visit someplace that's thousands of miles away, there's already a discomfort factor right there.
Sure.
So you want to try and make sure that the trip is as comfortable as for you as possible. And if you can increase that comfort level, it just makes the whole trip much better.
All right, last question. One place that you haven't visited yet that you really want to get to?
Antarctica.
I know that about you. I do, and I want to get there too. Do you think you'll make it?
Well, I hope so. The ultimate Antarctica trip for me would be to both go to the South Pole, stay overnight there, and also play with the penguins.
Yeah. No Hilton's down there yet, though, right?
No.
Yeah. All right. Well, as we get ready to wrap up, tell folks where they can find you. We've talked a bit about the gate, but where can they find you? What's the best way to stay in touch and hear what you have to say?
The best way is to contact me via email. That would be thegatewithbriancohen@gmail.com. That's really the best way to contact me. I do have a Twitter channel, but I don't tell anybody about it. I can't even tell you what exactly it is. It's The Gate with Brian Cohen, but it's abbreviated.
There you have it, folks. The Twitter feed for Brian Cohen, the best-kept secret in travel.
That's correct. But and it's funny because people are noticing it. I only have two followers on it so far, but people are noticing it, so I'm really, really happy about that.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being on the Now Boarding podcast. You can find Brian at The Gate. You can find him on Travelzork. You can find him on Inside Flyer. And you can find him here on the Now Boarding podcast, the official podcast of Boarding Area. Hope you'll tune in again next week where we'll have another Boarding Area personality talking about how they like to travel. Until then, we'll see you soon.